Last Mishnah of the Perek, Mishnah Ches. Now we have six more things that a person finds, more contracts, but these, the finder should give it back to the presumed owner. The reason why is because in these six, it's something that the Beis Din created, a paperwork that was created by a Beis Din. Since the Beis Din created it, we do not assume they went to the trouble of writing this contract, whatever it is, and then not having delivered. Beis Din doesn't do that. This is part of corroboration to my suggestion that the previous case, it's because the sofa was hard to come by. Beis Din has got in-house sofa, I assume, whatever it is. They don't start making edicts and then not carrying them out. That's crazy. And if they're smart, they would destroy it if it wasn't delivered, whatever the story is. So therefore, you presume if you find it, it's still in effect. So here are those six things. Matze igros shum. Igros shum is like a letter of an appraisal letter. The case is where the borrower failed to pay the lender, so then the lender took the item to the Beis Din. The Beis Din said, okay. They go down to the borrower's property and they appraise his assets. And they say, okay, you owe 10 grand. Well, we appraise that the chairs in the house are worth, $600 and a table. And they give him an itemized thing, authorizing the lender to seize, what they appraise to compensate. When he's dead, when he's alive, everything. Yeah, when he's alive, it's your stuff. You owe the money. But cash is king. But if you haven't got cash, then we're going to start taking your stuff. Once you're dead, that's not just dead. Two things. When you're dead, you only collect from. That's actually not even a point. That's secondary. Once you're dead, it's true. Only the real estate collects. The issue of the acharias is, once I sell my chattel and once I sell my chairs, so now they are unencumbered, meaning that they have no acharias, so the lender cannot collect from the chairs once they've been sold. Once, if I eBay off my chairs, you as lender can't go and find the purchaser of my chairs and say those chairs are really mine because I was here first. No. The din of achrayas means that the real assets stand as surety. There's like a lien on them, but there's no lien on movables. Yeah. Fine. So here this is the igros shum. It's the Beis Din's edict saying we've appraised this is what should be, what's going to cover the loan. The igros mazon. The second case is where a woman gets married for a second time. And she gets her husband to agree, which is normal, to support her child from the first marriage. So then it'll come into agreement. You're agreeing to pay for my, kids' food and education, whatever the story is, for 6 years until the child's 18 or whatever the deal will be. But it doesn't matter. Who cares what the deal is? The husband agreed to whatever he agreed to.
And that's not in the ksuba or the tanoim.
No, not in the ksuba. Yeah, because he doesn't have to pay for her children. Right? But she comes in demanding that. So she has a separate tanoim. Condition, a separate contract about mazonos, that the child should be paid for and supported. So then what happens is, he failed to deliver that, so she sues him. Great marriage, right? So, then the Beis Din will have to enforce and say, okay, this, it's good, you have to pay your, I don't know if it's called in English, whatever it is, you have to pay for your stepchild's food. Problem is, that's obviously an ambiguous number. How much do you pay? You neglected to pay for the child's food for 18 months. How much you have to pay now? So the Beis Din has to get involved and get assessed how much the child eats, and I don't know if it's the child's BMI, I don't know what they figure out. But the point is that they assess how much it costs to feed a child. So then they will then make a paperwork and say, we calculated that you owe $17,000.18. That is what we're talking about here. So if you find that one lying around, you give it back to the woman because obviously she has to collect from her husband. Shtari chalitza, ume unin, these are straightforward things. Chalitza, when a woman dies and she has her husband and her children, she has to do either Yibum or Chalitza. If she does Yibum, then she has a husband. If she does Chalitza, she needs a piece of paper that shows that she's free to marry anybody. If she's a woman who's divorced, has a get. She's neither divorced, she doesn't have a get, so she needs this instead of a get. She has this shtar, this contract that says she did Chalitza, and therefore she's free to go. And same goes with Miyun. It's a little different, but the Miyun, the same thing as a girl, a different case. The Chalitza star is she shows she's the Chalutza, and then she can get remarried to anyone she wants, not a Kohen. The Miyun is something else. Miyun is, normally we said it before in the parak, that a father can marry off his daughter until she's grown up. The Bugar is 12 and a half. The rabbi said if the father's not around, we empower the mother or the brother to marry the girl off in the father's stead. So they can marry her off, so they can get her husband. The reason why they need this reminding you, is if the girl's 10 years old, she has no power to enter marriage herself. She's a katana. So she can't be legally married. She can't accept the kesef of kedushin. So you're empowering the older brother or the mother to do it in her place. Fine. So she becomes married. If they do that, they marry her off. The problem is she only married midrabban, which means the rabbi said, listen, if you don't like being married to this guy, you can do miyun. You can just reject him. You can say, I don't want to be married to him. The base then annuls the marriage. That's the best word, annuls. So miyun is the rejection, but then what happens is you get a contract of miyun, annulments of the marriage. Now that, when a girl does miyun, I should speak out, as if she was never married at all. So the girl has miyun, the star miyun, says that she's never been married. She was whatever she was, whatever you want to call this. But the marriage is invalid and totally annulled.
So
she could marry Cohen. That's the point. Right? So the point is, you find some girl star miyun lying around, you assume it's because she's a divorcee, whatever you call it, that word, annullee, and give it back to her.
Before what age?
It's a good question. It could be before she's able to accept. If she's too young, it could be that it doesn't work. But let's presume from any age. 3 years old, whatever. I don't even know.
She has to wait until she's 12 to do the miyun?
She has to do the miyun before she hits 12.
Oh, before she hits 12.
Yeah. Before she hits, she becomes a gadola. It's a bit of a raid. What happens if...
Right. So even as a katana, she has the ability to
do miyun.
To do miyun, which is a strong legal action, but it's still...
Yeah, so she's and it's a machlokas. If you need, it was back in Yivamos, if she needs two witnesses, or she needs three, like a basin. We pass on three, like a basin.
And if the relationship is marriage was consummated before even...
Doesn't matter. That's meaningless.
It's still irrelevant.
It's totally irrelevant. Totally irrelevant to her.
Never married.
Yeah, she's not married.
So she could be
coming, no
years.
Problem.
Sorry, yeah, she could be living with a husband, they could even be sleeping together, and she's 10 years old, 11 years old. She can, at 11 and a half, say, this guy's no good for me, and get rid of him, and she's never married. She's not a basula anymore, I mean, obviously.
But then she didn't get a kesuba either, does she?
No, she doesn't get a kesuba, she gets nothing. She just backs out.
She was never married.
She can marry a Cohen. Not a Cohen Godel if she's a basula. Right, anyways, correct. She's not a basula. And not a Cohen Godel anyways, because, yeah. Right. There's some level of complexity. Whatever. Whatever, that's enough. That's good. Yeah. There's always a level of complexity. That's what the Shtari Miyun are. Shtari Berurin. Berur is like to select, you know, like Borer as the Isra and Shabbos. Here's the issue. The issue is when you and me have a fight and we can't agree on what basin to go to. So you choose your dine and I choose my dine, and then we make a shtari berurin, and we make a contract agreeing that my dine and your dine will pick a third dine, and those three will constitute the basin, and we submit to that basin. It's like a contract that we agree to. That's how we solve a stalemate. So that's what we're talking about here. So if you find a shtari berurin, which that has some teeth, because it makes, let's call them, the defendants liable to whatever judgment the basin set on him. So we want to give it back. So if you find the shtari berurin, we'll give it back to them. Truth is, anything that's called Masa Basin, the Gemara says, although I'm not 100% sure why, it wants this to be referring to specifically to what's called the Shtar Chalta'ata. Chalta'ata is like really, bless you, it's very similar to this Igereshum. The difference is the Igereshum, the first of the six, was like this, like, you know, the appraisal, how much you can collect, the lender can collect from the borrower. Lung Tosos Yontov, that's one answer, that's straightforward. He says this is very similar, just this is like a seizure letter. In other words, in the Igeres Shum, what happens is they knock on the door of the borrower and they say, we're coming in to praise. He said, come on in. The second case is the borrower is not playing ball. So then they just say, listen, he's not around. The borrower's not around, we're acting unilaterally. We see he's got a car in the driveway. We're giving you authorization to go and seize that car for payment. So that's this case here. That's how Tosi Yom Tov learns. When the borrower is not present, we're still giving instructions to allow the lender to seize the property. So again, all these things, since the basin did it, we don't assume the basin did it and changed their mind. They're effective, and therefore, hooray, ze yachzir, you should give it back to the person so we can collect or enforce the contract or protect yourself from the contract, whatever it may be. Fine. New paragraph here. We're reverting back to the Shtar Chov that's found. So before we say that Shtar Chov is found, you don't get involved unless you know. But how could you know? So you could know, for example, if there's witnesses or if there's what's called the simon. So this is already introducing simonim. I'll describe it more. I'd much prefer to describe it in the next Mishnah when we talk about it more fully. But simon just means, you know, it means like a descriptor that indicates that you are the person who lost it, because you could describe what was lost. So matza b'chafisa or be deluskama, and these are basically kind of leather pouches or briefcases, whatever it is. The point is, it's inside a kli. So the ayah is in a kli, and the one person comes up and says, "I lost my." So then the finder would find it. You put up a sign. I found the contract. You know, if it might be yours, let me know. And then the finder, the loser, says, "I lost my contract," and it was inside. You know, black briefcase. You know, with orange stripes. So whatever it is, the point is, Zuzkama gives it a uniqueness to it, and he can claim based on the fact he can describe what's inside this briefcase, whatever it is. Similarly, a tachrish shel shtaros. It means like there are multiple shtaros, like at least three kind of strung together, like in a single like roll. Yeah, roll together. Oh, gudel shel shtaros. Here they're not rolled, connected one to the next. They're like a stack of three. It might be like rolled up, like, you know, a newspaper is rolled up, but it's like separate pages together. Point is, again, hareza yachzir, those should also be returned, because that's a simon. Once the person can claim, oh, I lost it, it has to be at least three. Become a gudah shel shtaros, what is it? How many is that? That's three. Shalosha, kashur and zeb is there, three attached one to the other. Because already that's in its own right, like a simon. The simon will be, there were three of them there. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, So echad halova mishlosha. If one guy had borrowed from three people, and you see the contracts, like it was, there's three different lenders, but the same borrower three times. So then yachzir halova, you return it to the bar, because what do you think he got three different? Obviously, highly unlikely that three different contracts, three different borrowers ended up in one person's hands, unless that person was the person, the borrower is getting his contracts back, is paying off the debts. And similarly, shlosha haloven me'echad, if you have a contract with the three different borrowers from the same lender, again, yachzir l'malva, you assume that the lender, this is his stash of IOUs, he got lost, give it back to him.
And why not for two? It's the same.
I guess there are other possibilities.
It's, you find two from the same lender.
I don't know, I told you hold my star until I'm going out of town. No? No, that's MCOT. I think it really is MCOT. He needs to borrow $1,000. I say I'll give him 500, you give 500. Listen, you hold mine, you're in charge, you keep the vault. I think safe, that's the answer to your question. I think just keeping in mind, and like, I talk about a vault, but I'm joking. Safekeeping was a big problem in those days. Like, they didn't have safes, and they didn't have banks. So like, if someone who's got power to keep things, he's got an armed guard, or he's a strong man, or whatever it is, he's a natural person to keep with. Anyways, whatever the case may be, just not proof enough. New din, like a new paragraph. Matashtar bein shtarosav, ve'enu yudea mativo. You are just going through your paperwork, and you see, oh, there's some contract between Mr. A and Mr. B, an IOU, let's say. So then, what do you do about that? Who should you give it to? So the answer is nothing. Let us sit there until Eliyahu Navi comes and tells you who to give it to. Now, what happens if, even if you are the lender, let's say, and we just don't remember, was it paid back, wasn't it paid back? And, or it's just third parties involved. Either way, im yesh imahan simponot, if you have the card, the IOU, it says, you owe me, says, you know, you owe me $100. And then on the back of it, it has like the staple to it, you know, the receipt, $100 was paid. So then, yase mashe basimponos, you should do whatever like the second contract that sort of undoes the first one says. In other words, I don't remember if it was paid or not paid, and it's only possible that I just had the receipt waiting for you to come, and when you pay me back, I'll give it to you. Since I don't remember, and I have a second, more subsequent document that seems to suggest something happened, I'll go after what happened subsequently and assume that simponos are like things that are like, they're like a shovar, undoes what it undoes or mitigates the first contract, so assume that the second contract was effective and do whatever, you know, whatever that suggests is what you should do in terms of collecting or not collecting the loan. Okay. Very good.